And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to our Laz and Powers. This is Scott Powers, joined by Mark Lazarus. We're both of The Athletic. Mark, welcome. It's, it's one of those weeks I don't remember what day it is. It's Thursday?
It is Thursday all day.
Yes, it is. So.
It feels like the same day every day in the NHL, doesn't it? We're having the same discussion all the time.
Yeah, we will not be talking much hockey today. There's not a lot going on the Blackhawks, first off, and secondly, certainly with their decision last night with the Blackhawks Pride Night deciding not to wear the Pride Night jerseys, and not even giving the players the decision, but opting because of security fears for the Russian players back in Russia that they've taken out of the players' hands, and they've decided to not wear the jerseys. And it's not everything they're doing on Pride Night. There's certainly a lot of other things planned, but it's a thing that's going to be talked about, and it'll certainly be the major part of this conversation will evolve around this for the next for the time being. And certainly it takes it to make, I guess, just in the bigger picture, just everything that we've written about and talked about the Blackhawks moving forward, it feels like they've taken two steps back again.
Yeah, we're going to bring in Gabby Ugarte of the To Hockey With Love and the Alphabet Sports Collective to have a nice conversation with us about this issue with the Blackhawks and in general. But it's just relentlessly disappointing to be a hockey fan right now. It's just gut punch after gut punch about a sport and a league you want to love that just makes it so goddamn difficult every time. And for the Blackhawks in particular, like they're the Minnesota Wild and the New York Rangers, they can get away with this. The Blackhawks are under more scrutiny for their off ice everything than any team, maybe in all of pro sports right now. We're less than 2 years removed from the Kyle Beach story, and for them to pooch this, it really undoes a lot of the good they've done. And that's not fair. Like it's just a jersey, but this is the single most visible thing that they do. And this is in the public eye right now. If you're not in that back office or that front office seeing and experiencing all the positivity they're trying to create there under Danny Wirtz and Jamie Faulkner, you're like, oops, my Twitter mentions just, yep, it's the Blackhawks. No surprise there. It's the Blackhawks. Of course it's the Blackhawks. Like, this is just an absolute public relations nightmare for this team. And frankly, it should be. I mean, this is the wrong decision, and they deserve to be, piled on for it, frankly.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that's I know that they're doing a lot of stuff, you know, within the community and within those certain within the groups, and certainly, you know, within within this community too. And I know that doesn't change anything, but it's a larger scope of this, and you know, and how fans feel about this, and you know, like you felt like if there was one team that was gonna do this, it was gonna be the Blackhawks, considering everything, right? You know, like, it just you know, none of it should be surprising at this point, but it's completely shocking.
What really sucks about it in a lot of ways is, you know, 2 weeks ago when the Blackhawks were in Detroit, it was in the wake of some of these decisions by these teams. I knew that Pride Night was coming up, so I went to Connor Murphy, who is really the captain of this team with Jonathan Toews out. He's the longest tenured player by far. He's very well respected, and I know that he's active in this space. And he's a really good, you know, he's a very community oriented guy. He was delivering meals to hospitals during the pandemic. I mean, this is a guy to whom this stuff kind of matters. And I asked him, and I said before I prefaced my interview, I said, "Hey, Connor, I want to ask you about this stuff. If you're not comfortable talking about it extemporaneously, I totally understand. And you can get your thoughts together and we could talk later." And I said, "What do you think is going to happen March 26th on Pride Night?" And he didn't hesitate. He said, "We're going to wear them. I can't imagine there's nobody in this room that's not going to want to wear them." I'm like, "Did you have these conversations?" He's like, "I don't need to have these. I know the guys in this room. We want to wear them." And, you know, he said it was disappointing, was the word he used, to see other teams not wearing them, and to take the decision out of that man and other people's hands and say, "You're not allowed to wear those jerseys. We're not going to let you wear those jerseys." That's what pisses me off. If you want to let the Russians not wear them, if you want to let, you know, Christians who cite their beliefs as reasons they can't wear them, well, fine, whatever. Like, they have to answer for that themselves. But to not let people who want to show their support, that's just bullshit to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it feels like Russia and all the anti-gay propaganda, you know, in this country and other countries, it's winning, right? Like,
Someone said in my mentions that I guess we do negotiate with terrorists, and that's melodramatic, but it's true. We're letting them scare us into not supporting people. Yeah. And it's just a shitty thing to do.
Yeah. Now they're dictating our sports now, you know, like, they're dictating our politics.
We're letting Vladimir Putin decide what you wear during warm-ups in an NHL game. Like, what the hell has this come to?
Yep. No, for sure. And we have certainly, we'll dive even further deeper into this with Gabby, and so let's bring Gabby on. Bringing in Gabriel Ugarte, who is the co-founder of To Hockey With Love, also on the board of Alphabet Sports Collective, which just recently launched, which is a nonprofit that, you know, is to provide safer environments for people of all sexual identities and all genders, all expressions of gender in hockey. Gabby, it's funny that we talked just recently. I thought this was, we weren't going to have much to talk about in this conversation, as at least when it comes to the Blackhawks, where we were more of kind of what we expected from the Blackhawks Pride Night, and then last night's news. It kind of changed everything, where the Blackhawks made the decision not to allow their players to wear their pride jerseys in response to what they think is safety concerns for their Russian players. So certainly it kind of changes our conversation. Obviously we've written a lot about this, and you've written a lot about this yourself, and too. So one, thanks for coming on. But there's certainly a lot to dive into here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I was really, I was like, oh, okay. Like, definitely changed the conversation when I saw it last night. I thought I was like finally done talking about the Blackhawks for the newsletter, but hey, we're back.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I want to say, out of all the teams in the league that I thought would try to avoid this, I would have thought that like the Blackhawks would have been, you know, like the one to try the hardest to not do this. So I'm surprised, because like you guys have said, I've also heard that they've done a lot of good work internally, and this really does like set them back to square one.
Yeah, I mean, when you know, you can do all the things out of sight, and frankly, those are things that matter, and they do help. And, you know, we always say we want these teams doing more than just a token Pride Night, right? We want them doing this stuff year round, and they do. But this is the single most visible thing to do. It's such a small gesture to wear a rainbow colored, rainbow themed jersey for 17 minutes during warmups and then auction them off afterwards. It's not the most significant, you know, thing they do, but it's the most visible thing they do. And for them not to, for them to, you know, make the same team decision that the Wild did, that the Rangers did, and that I'm sure more teams are going to do, as opposed to what the Sharks and Flyers did, which is let the players decide for themselves. I mean, the outside view of the Blackhawks is so low right now to begin with, but does this, like you said, I mean, square one's the same phrase I used yesterday. It just seems like it undoes everything they've been trying to do the last 24 months.
Yeah, because, I mean, it dominates the conversation, right? Nothing else matters right now because this is all everyone is going to be talking about. We can talk about like all the great things that they're doing, and they probably are, but nobody's going to be talking about that. And so that feels equally, am I allowed to cuss on here?
Yep.
Oh, of course.
Okay. Equally as shitty. So, it's really disappointing. I expect this to be a trend that we're going to see across the league. I'm not particularly happy with like the Russia thing, the Russia excuse. I don't know, like, what's the take that you guys have on that? Like, why do you
think? I understand that you know, if it's easy for me to sit here and say, you know, have some courage and do this anyway. I don't have family back in Russia, but other Russian players, Evgeny Malkin's worn it. A couple of the Sharks players wore it the other day. Look, Vladimir Putin's got a lot on his mind right now. I don't think he's monitoring what's happening in the fucking NHL warm-up. Like, I just feel like, and if you read the letter, and now granted, you can't trust anything that government says or does, but if you read the letter of that law, I mean, the worst they can do is fine you.
Like, yeah.
Now, so, it's Russia. I get it. I get that there's a certain kind of fear that comes with that government. But this does feel like an easy way out for them, for all these teams to say, you know what? This provides everybody cover, just in case we do have some homophobes on the team that don't want to wear this thing. This feels like that.
That's kind of what feels like it, like that there was more than one person in that locker room who didn't want to wear it. And it just became, you know, they had this like excuse to reach for. But yeah, like you said, Dr. Brett Party at Hockey Society wrote about this, which is also like what. It's like, why didn't the Blackhawks do more research into this? Like, didn't they think that people were going to go and like dig into the things that they were saying? And so he went and he kind of, like you said, it's a feat. It's never been applied to, you know, Russians working outside of Russia. So it feels weird. And then Patrick Johnson at the province in Vancouver also talked to like a foreign policy expert and was like, yeah, like I don't think this seems like such a like weird thing to happen, like given the current like political climate, that they're going to be worrying about, you know, this like tiny thing, and that it may like there may very well be like family pressure, but it's not the government. So a
lot of it feels like the unknown, and you know, I was texting with a source last night from the Blackhawks, and I They know they're going to get killed on this, you know, like I think they understood that they were going to. Yeah, it's such a bad look, and it does erase a lot of what they've done. And, you know, as much as they want to push those other things, that no one's going to, you know, listen to them about it. You know, they said their security officials said there's a concern. And, you know, and no one really wants to explain what that concern of safety is, because there isn't really an example of that yet. So I think that's the hard thing to fathom. And even this morning, I put out some, you know, just trying to hit up some government officials to see what the guidance is. It doesn't feel like the NHL is given much guidance on this either, where, you know, like you'd think there'd be a message across the league that, you know, you're putting your Russian players in safety fear. It doesn't feel like anyone's done any proper research on this and to see what's the reality of the situation.
Well, the way it was explained to me is so convoluted. And this is from the Blackhawks source. And they said, if you just let the Russians sit it out, which is probably the right course of action, if those guys are legitimately worried, you let them sit it out, fine, whatever. We've gone through this before. You let them sit it out. And their argument was, well, then they have to answer for it. And what are they supposed to say? We sat out because we don't want to get our families arrested in Russia, which implies that they would have worn the jersey if not for the law, which therefore means they endorse the message, which is therefore LGBTQ plus propaganda. I mean, it's so convoluted. And I again, easy for me to say, not my family, but you just have a lawyer craft a very carefully worded statement for those guys, for Nikita Zaitsev, Philip Khrushchev, and Anton Khudobin. They say that. They don't answer any more questions. Whatever happened to no comment? No comment used to be a thing in this world. Just don't answer any more questions about it. And then Connor Murphy and the rest of the team get to wear the jerseys that they want to wear. Connor Murphy's on the record to me saying he wants to wear it, and everybody on the team wants to wear them. It means something to them. And everybody gets what they want out of this. This is just a cop-out. That's all this is.
Doesn't Khrushchev compete for Switzerland, though? He doesn't. He's not even. I know
he has Russian. He's like Russian Swiss.
Yeah. Well, his dad is. His dad's a Russian. He's been a dad's been a Russian coach, and his dad's from Russia. So there's it's.
Yeah, but why would they target him and not like Malkin or literally anybody else who's much more higher profile? Like it's. I think for me, it's like the fact that they didn't think this through that annoys me the most. Which is, I think, a lot of the things I don't expect much from the sport as a whole, and you know, but I was like, please just like think things through before you come out here and say it. Because then it's like everybody else, I was like, actually, let me explain how wrong all of it, everything that you've just said is, and that's really annoying.
I wonder who's guiding them is like the bigger question, you know, like, because I'm sure they, like, you know, like, it sounds like they've thought things through, but who's actually guiding their decisions, you know, like, that's what I want to. I mean, and this story isn't ending here today, you know. Like, there's at some point the Blackhawks are going to have to speak, you know. They've sort of had, you know, people behind the scenes speaking for them now and kind of explaining it to them. But, you know, if there is true transparency, you know, Danny Wirtz, Jamie Faulkner, Kyle Davidson, whoever needs to kind of get out and, you know, speak about this, you know, that was one of the issues with a lot of the Kyle Beach situation now, too, was. When there were all those questions to be had, it was Jeremy Colleton and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane answering those questions. And that, frankly, didn't go so well for anyone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, like, what is the security team? Like, I do you guys know what that means?
I mean, the security to me, it's Brian Higgins. It's one dude who walks the guys into the ring so fans don't attack them. I mean, I'm sure they have a much more elaborate security team.
Yeah. It was explained to me as security officials, but I
don't know who that is.
Explanation that needs to.
Yeah, is that law enforcement that they work with? Do they have a contract, a third party? Like, we need to know who these people are and why they think that they.
They have a scout in Russia, but yeah, you would think. I mean, at this point, you'd probably bring the government in, right? Or just trying to get some larger insight into it feels like the NHL should be providing them with more information of what's. Like, if the Sharks go ahead with it and the Blackhawks don't, like, where is there's obviously a difference in understanding of the information or different, you know, something different being pushed on. So, I guess the fact that other teams are doing it and then the Blackhawks don't, it certainly kind of, it brings more questions than answers.
Gabby, yeah. I'm curious. I've been reporting on this for, you know, over a year now, these issues in hockey. And something that keeps coming up to me from, you know, people in the queer hockey community is that they don't really want these nights in the first place. They think they're more trouble than they're worth, and they turn people against them, and that unless they're going to go perfectly, it's not worth having. I don't know if I believe that, but it's not my really place to say that. What do you think about that? That the idea that now they say you're couching that if you're not going to have pride nights, you can't have military nights. You can't have, you know, Ukraine night. You can't have any kind of themed nights if you're not going to have pride nights. So that's the question.
Didn't they just have a Ukraine Heritage Night?
They did.
Huh. Okay.
Funny how that works, right?
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So I think a lot of people feel like they're performative, and I guess to some extent they are, right? But especially if like your organization isn't doing anything outside of these Pride Nights. But like a Pride Night for me, somebody who never had any trouble, you know, with my family, with my friends, like I have a very supportive queer community. They don't really like mean a lot to me. But there are kids who don't have that support system, who are maybe sometimes, doesn't even have to be like a rural town, they just don't have that support, who turn to hockey. That means something to them, right? That there are people out there who want the best for them, who want them to be safe and to be treated with dignity. And I think that's who I feel for the most, those kids who are seeing people that they like, you know, just not be able to do this. So it's weird.
I think adults, we get cynical about this stuff, right? We're naturally, but if you're a 10-year-old hockey player and you're, you know, you're trying to figure out your own identity, and you see Jonathan Toews or Connor Murphy wearing that jersey, it sends the right message. And I think that there's value in that.
Yeah. You know, queer youth are a particularly vulnerable population, and I think that we should be doing everything to make them feel safe, to make them feel welcome, particularly in a space like hockey. And we're not doing that, and we're actually going backwards, which is, you know, it's disappointing and a little scary, to be honest. But you know, we aren't having the broader conversation that this isn't just like a Russia issue. This is like a regression we're seeing at a society-wide level, right?
Right.
And I think like if we turn it to that conversation, we might be able to get them to like get their act straight, to put in a policy. But people don't like to hear that sports are political. So
oh yeah, there's no politics in sports at all, right?
Yeah, at all. Yeah, but I mean that's what I've been thinking about. Like it's so over the past year, there's been like a really, really sharp increase in the number of anti-LGBTQ legislation put at state level. I think like the last article that I read, it was like March 4th, there was like 385. And that was more than the past 5 years combined. And so like the fact that this is becoming like a big talking point, particularly a big talking point for the right, hockey's like traditionally conservative, so of course we were going to kind of see that trickle down and reflect in the sport. So I don't know, like I honestly, where do we go from here? Like everything. No,
that's the next question, right? Is how, you know, it's always one step forward, two steps back. How do we make up all those lost steps? Like nobody buys it anymore when they say hockey is for everyone, right? Nobody's buying that. So how do we get that back? How do we make, because I feel like, you know, it's weird because yes, there's a hard right streak that runs through the NHL. There's no doubt about that. This is a very white, very conservative, very wealthy sport for the most part. But it felt like for a while there, hockey was kind of in the forefront of this. You know, Brent Sobel had the Stanley Cup at a Pride Parade in 2010, you know, and you know, Hockey is for Everyone campaign has been there for a while. And there's been, it felt like it might've been, you know, a minor movement, but it was there in hockey before I feel it was in some other sports. And now it feels like they're so far behind. And like you said, the regression is real. And so what's the next step? How do we turn the momentum around?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that like, if we can't approach it from like the human, like, hey, everyone deserves to be treated well and deserves to be treated with dignity. The argument here is there is money in diversity, right? So mm-hmm. make it about like, you guys are trying to bring in new players. This is, you know, these are the strategies, you know, try to find, I meant new fans, try to find new like meetings to work in and do strategies that will bring them in. And I think they're kind of trying, but I don't think that they see like, this is the way that you grow the game. You know, you make it better, you make it accessible, you make it more inclusive. So I think for them, it has to be like, this is a financial decision. We're investing in the future of the sport. And that means getting these types of initiatives right.
I guess having not come into hockey until later in life that, yeah, I just, you know, coming in 10 years now, just and certainly trying to understand the sport and at different levels and understanding the off-ice stuff. And I don't, like, it's, you know, like, it's looking at what Hockey on Your Block and even things within, you know, the people have done, try to do within Chicago, a lot of it just seems unrealistic, you know? Like, I guess I've come to the conclusion that I don't know. Like, I just think growing the game and certainly the way that, you know, like, the fighting's still implemented in the way that they've never really tried to accentuate, you know, like, the you know, making the superstars the faces of the league, or just things that would attract youth and people of, you know, different colors and different identities. And I don't know. I think hockey does so much in itself to prevent, taking those steps and, you know, and really growing it. And so much of it is a financial, you know, growing up in Chicago, I didn't play hockey or was influenced by hockey and, you know, and I think that's the case for a lot of people. And I don't think that's changed at all. And, you know, having the occasional stickball tournament or whatever, like it doesn't really feel It doesn't really feel welcoming in a lot of ways, or does a lot of things to really open those doors to people. And Chicago should be, you know, like Chicago should be one of those markets for that, where the grassroots should be. And a lot of this stuff is done at the grassroots level, and it doesn't feel like there has been much of an impact. And I know that if you've tried to even get in at some of those levels, and it there's not really like clear entry points to that.
The fact that you just called street hockey or ball hockey stick hockey is a good example that you don't know anything about hockey, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an insular community, and I think that like actual doing investment in diversity would require people to give up positions of power, to give space for other people to have power or like decision-making abilities. And I think that's very hard. It's a very insular community. That's why like the old boys club is a thing, right, that we talk about. But yeah, it's so disappointing. I mean, I didn't know that hockey, there was a professional league in hockey until I was 20. You know, I grew up in Home Park. So it's not like I'm, you know, outside, out in the boonies, like no connection. And so I don't know. I think there's so many people who are like, hey, this is the way that we do it, and they just don't want to listen. So what can you do?
Well, that's why it's almost like, you know, when we talk about anything, you know, I wrote a language about homophobic language in hockey. When we talk about acceptance in hockey, it's almost like we've given up on the current generation. And it's like, let's just move on to the next. Let's get into youth hockey. Let's get into junior hockey. You know, they're banning fighting in the QMJHL. That's going to trickle up where there's going to be fewer fighters in the NHL. And it's kind of the same idea with diversity, is if we can get these kids get into like, they join a team at like age six. And they're in a locker room with those same 18 kids for their entire childhood. Like, it's the same group all the way through. They don't meet anybody outside of their group. So if you only know straight white kids, you're going to be, you know, have a trouble when a non-straight white kid comes into your locker room. So it's like you need to get humanization and representation in those youth leagues, I feel like, or it's just going to keep perpetuating itself. Because like you said, insular is the right word. That's hockey more than any other sport, is this kind of isolated insular world, where you don't really meet anybody who's not like you. And part of that is socioeconomics. Part of that is, God, if you were a gay kid who liked hockey, why would you want to be in a hockey locker room and deal with this shit on a daily basis? So until we can kind of get it at the youth levels, I feel like the NHL is going to, it's going to be too, it's almost too late to win hearts and minds.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a decision that they have to make, of like, what do they want the future of the sport to look like? Because like the decisions that you're making right now, that's not going to be welcoming to anybody in the future. The NHL drives culture, right? They drive, you know, play, you know, kids want to be like their favorite players. And if you're having these players who are being vocally homophobic, it's not going to do anything for the locker rooms of where kids are playing either, you know? And sports are already such a difficult place to be in, you know, across the board, if when you're a queer child. And I think it's, none of this is making it easier for them either, you know? I just like, it's, that's the frustrating thing. It's like, you want to grow the game, but then you're not like doing any of the brave things that requires for you guys to actually do that.
Or even the not brave things, like simply wearing a goddamn warm-up jersey.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't like, you know, this isn't stepping in front of a bullet for somebody. It's wearing a fucking jersey.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I have been wondering if this is something more like that the NHL doesn't really want to address it. They have been like at the crosshairs of like Fox News lately.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And I wonder if that's also something like that they
Shut down an entire diversity job fair because, you know, Ron DeSantis shook his sword at them. I mean, it's just such a cowardly league. Like, you think Adam Silver would back down from Ron DeSantis in the NBA? He'd be like, fuck off, dude.
He'd be like,
we're,
okay,
we're moving our all-star game. Like, baseball moved its all-star game. Baseball. Talk about old boys network. They moved their all-star game out of, what was it, Georgia, right? Because of anti-voter laws. And moved it to Colorado at the last minute. NHL's like, well, we're still having our all-star game here in South Florida. Look at the beach. It's nice. Yay. There's no courage in this sport.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I always look at it as hockey as something that's like, it's eating itself up right now, right? Like, it's not sustainable the way that, that things are going. So, it's hard. It's hard to write about. Like, I'm always like, I'm about to leave. Like, I can't be here anymore.
It's so depressing. It's just relentlessly disappointing. It's hard to get excited. Like, I love the sport and I hate the league. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, it has, you know, hockey has like such a, obviously I love it, right? Like, our newsletter is called To Hockey With Love. And that was kind of like our attempt at finding our like love for the sport again, right? To like write about it in a different way. And then it's the same thing, you know, like, how many more times can we talk about these like terrible issues without us getting tired either? So, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm just, it's like a constant state of disappointment. But I also do try to think, like, I think like these types of things, like the newsletter, like the nonprofit organization are important. Like, that's where we hold on to the hope that something can change. I think that there has to be more policy put into place. I do think that the NHL needs to step in here and kind of be like, all right, here's how we're going to handle it. Is it going to be like a religious accommodation? But there has to be like something so that these players are not playing. They're not in the stadium when these nights are happening, and we can frame it however you want. But I don't think they should be able to dominate the conversation.
I think the conversation is going to evolve to the other jerseys too, where I just got an email just now from the Chicago Steel, the USHL team, about their military appreciation jersey auction. And at some point, like, there's going to be, I'm sure Russia's not going to like having its players in, you know, US military jerseys. Like, I feel like this could get, you know, like, it's going to expand, and you think the uproar over the pride jerseys is bad. Wait until the right side and everyone else gets involved when, you know, like, they can't have the military jerseys, you know? Like, I think the NHL is, yeah, I don't, it's so passive on some of these issues, but it seems, you know, like, that's something that maybe that motivates them, or, you know, like, I think they're going to have to make some decisions around the NHLPA too about, about the jerseys in general, because I think that this has opened up a can of worms, and it's going to expand the conversation about what players can choose to do and what they can choose opt to do, because it took one person to be like, I don't want to wear this jersey. And here we are with all these teams deciding not to.
Isn't that crazy though, that it was just like this one minor thing and it kind of like snowballed into this issue? I think, like, for me, that just tells us like a lot of these initiatives weren't like firmly rooted in anything. And then made it easy for be like, oh, well, he was emboldened, so like, why not me? You know, I know that nothing's gonna happen. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now. I also, it's disappointing because I know that like Kim Davis has been working in the league for 5 years, and I really, like, I can't even imagine being her right now and seeing like all of this and all of her hard work just kind of being rolled back a little bit. So I feel for her. I feel for like the queer people working in the sport. They're like, oh, you know, like that these teams, like, and the Sharks, you know, how do you deal with like knowing that somebody actively hate, like, he didn't say hate, but that it stands against
in the Bay Area of all places. It's not Pride.
Yeah. Back. I mean, how do you,
that,
like,
that's,
you
know? there are so many good people in the NHL that want to do the right thing, that want to make progress, that believe in all these, you know, worthy causes and stuff. And they're shouted down by the very vocal minority, right? I mean, we're talking a handful of guys here, really. Yeah. And it just shuts the whole system down. Just a handful of guys. It's just, you know, it's that slippery slope argument that the right wing loves to use so much, that, you know, hey, marry each other, you're going to be marrying a dog in a couple of years. It's just, you know, this is where we're at now. One person sits down, all of a sudden the whole system collapses. And it's just, and like you said, like, what if you are, you know, you just work in the front office of the NHL. You're not an assistant general manager or GM. You're just kind of a mid-level employee in a hockey team. And you're looking around and you see this. It's like, they don't like me here. They don't want me here. Like, it's just the message it sends is just terrible.
Yeah. Like, oh, I have like a, Like, I know, you know, sometimes people have beliefs and they don't tell you, and you don't need to know them, and you can work with them just fine. But this is like very di- this is a very different situation. Like, they're telling you in your face that they don't like you. That's what happens here for them. Like, I, so one of the th- I follow like a lot of like queer artists who are doing stuff in hockey, and a lot of them don't even include the Blackhawks anymore because of the logo. So like, how are you, like, I really want to know what their strategy is to bring in youth here, especially when you have like so many other sports in the city that are much more popular.
That's a good, that'd be a good way to change the conversation, is like tomorrow say, oh, we're changing the logo.
That would be
Now's the time.
that was the time. Honestly, I thought, I really thought that was a direction that they were heading, like they were cleaning house and they, you know, but I guess not. I guess I was very wrong.
I'm curious what happens if, you know, whenever Rocky Ward's moves on, you know, moves, I guess the organization is put more in Danny's hands, whether anything changes, whether there's, obviously there's been a lot of different movements around the logo and, you know, trying to create better ties, and certainly, yeah, just, you know, with the indigenous community. And yeah, I don't know, there's so many different ways with the Blackhawks. Like, it's like this one issue, then it's everything else. And yeah, I guess
Have you
that's.
noticed how all their gear in the last couple of years has had Blackhawks as two words? Like, that's been this new trend where this is like black, like
Oh.
the K is like on both lines, black and then Hawks. I feel like every time I see those, they've had a couple of shirts like that and logos. They've changed some, you know, tertiary logos where Blackhawks all of a sudden is two words again. I feel like they're like soft launching a bird logo. Like, I feel like that's, I've been saying for years that there's no way that in the year like 2035, they still have a cartoon Native American head as their logo. There's just no way that that's still going to be the case. I feel like they've been like soft testing this go back to two words thing, which they were for most of the franchise history. And then you could be Golden Knights and Black Hawks, and they're just a freaking black bird, and we all move on with our lives. I don't know. That's maybe, I might be wishful thinking on my part.
Oh man, I lost my train of thought. I wouldn't be surprised if they're like probably like have these plans already in the works, like that they're already planning for this. Just when it's gonna happen is up to anybody. But I like, obviously you guys, I have been very vocal about where I stand when it comes to the logo issue. And the funny thing is, like, I know most of the people who the Blackhawks work with in one way or another. But my question is why does it keep on being voted like the most, like the best logo in hockey? Like, I want this to, like, that's the question that I have, because it's not like that logo is used in other places, right? Like it's fairly common. So it's like, don't you want something that's like a little bit more unique, that represents like a new era for the sport? So, but yeah, people get mad when you bring up the logo. So I'm not trying to have
Remember
my
when Marc-Andre Fleury signed and he asked, why are you wearing those brown pads? He's like, I want to match it to the skin of the
Oh, that
face. I
was
was like, oh, Mark,
out of pocket.
no. What are you doing, man?
But I, you know, he's Marc-Andre Fleury, so
Yeah, he gets away with it. He gets away
yeah.
with it. He's, everything he does is well-meaning, so.
Yeah. I really wanted to see that goalie fight. I was,
Oh, God. It's
I
like, oh, I
knew
don't
that
like my hair. I
was
love that man.
my but yeah, how was it? You guys had him in the locker room for how many
Yeah,
months was it?
we weren't in the
we weren't
locker
in the
room.
locker room that season, so
Oh,
yeah.
that's right. Oof,
I think I
weird.
had like two one-on-one conversations with him, you know, out in hallways outside the rink a couple times. I mean, he was great to deal with, and I covered him when he was a rookie in Pittsburgh. That's how old I am. He was just kind of this giggly, shy, you know, broken English guy. But even back then, you could just tell he was like just the most delightful human being.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I was like, finally, like maybe I can start watching Chicago hockey again. And I don't know how I feel about it now, but like, I think the Blackhawks should have not just consulted the security team. I think they should have been just like consulted people who understand the sport at like the fan level, and find a different
They
way.
should not have consulted my Twitter mentions. I would just say that, because
Yeah, your Twitter mentions have been pretty bad,
oh yeah, it's been
huh?
interesting.
Yeah. Can I ask you about the Max Domi thing?
Sure.
Yeah, like why did you, I guess, say that?
You know, I didn't even know that history of Domi and those tweets from way back when. I mean, Max Domi was not a guy I was paying much attention to in 2016, 2017, whatever it was. So
Yeah.
when I saw all this hate for it, I was quote unquote doing my own research. And I couldn't find anything beyond the Trump socks and and those very bad immigration tweets about, you know, securing the borders up in Canada, whatever he was talking about. And but, you know, getting to know him throughout this year and talking about things like this and seeing how vocal he's been and marching in pride parades and, you know, that to me is an ally. Like even if 6 years ago at 21 years old, he said some stupid shit, he's still got to be held accountable for that, surely. But if someone evolves and changes their minds, someone changing their minds in any time, this generation of all of us, you know, this is what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to get people to think differently and we're trying to open their minds and we're trying to turn enemies into allies. I don't think running them off is necessarily the right way. I think, you know, embracing them as an ally and having that conversation with them about, hey, do you still believe this horrible shit you said 6-7 years ago? We need to talk about this. But running off people because this is not like a cancel culture bullshit thing. That's not what I'm talking about. But this is someone in hockey, a relatively prominent player in hockey, who has been a very vocal supporter of the queer community. And I think running him off because of something he said 6-7 years ago is counterproductive to what we're trying to do, which is get more people to change their minds.
Yeah, I guess I see that argument. But I also think that like allyship is contingent on the idea that people are not always going to be happy on you, right? And that doesn't stop you from being an allyship like an ally.
There's intersectionality at play here. I get that. Like, you know, if you're a queer immigrant right now, what do you feel about Max Domi? I fully understand that. And these are conversations that he needs to have publicly if he wants to be seen as having truly changed. Like, I don't know. I never, like I said, I didn't know about this stuff until recently. So I didn't, it's not something that came up in our conversations, but I just, if someone wants to walk alongside you, I think that you have to welcome them in and then have those hard conversations.
Yeah. I think it's like that idea of calling in instead of calling out.
Yeah.
But I think people are also right in their anger. I think especially in hockey where, I mean, sometimes it's not fair. But I think a lot of times it's justified. People are so like the sport doesn't give you anything, right? It's been like, I keep on thinking of like since basically 2020, it's just been scandal after major scandal after major scandal. And I think people are tired. I think people.
Yeah. And they're justifiably cynical. Like I said, I mean, I don't like, I'm not trying to invalidate anyone's feelings here. I'm just saying, you know, let's have that conversation with him because this seems like a grown up now. When he was a stupid kid back then, and that doesn't excuse what he said, but let's see if he's really evolved as a human being beyond one particular aspect of culture. You know, let's have that discussion. Let's not just write him off completely. Let's try to have that discussion if he's willing to have it.
Yeah. I think that hockey has actually made me much more empathetic. Especially like now that I started working on it, because you gotta have a lot of patience. You gotta have a lot of and I think one of like, I think a lot about this quote from like Reverend C.T. Vivian, that's like, when you ask somebody to give up hate, you need to be there for them too. So I think for me, it's like just finding that balance of like, how do we call them in while still being held accountable in like such a public sphere, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's what we're struggling with right now.
It's tough. None of this stuff is black and white. It's all so much nuance and gray areas. That it's really tough to navigate, especially in 280 characters where it's just easier to say, fuck this guy. I get it. I get it. There's a lot of times where I just want to say, fuck this guy. And I probably do more than I should, but there's no nuance out there. And that's what bothers me, is like, this guy sucks forever now because of this. And maybe he does, but maybe, you know, people change a lot in their 20s. And if you come out the other side a better person, we should want that. That should be the goal.
Yeah. I mean, he has to be the one that does that work too, you know? So if he came out and was like, yeah, you know what? I was shitty. I was 20. I was a hockey boy. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
I want to hear him say that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that it's also just easy. Saying sorry, it can be easy if you really mean it. Right. Mm-hmm. And it can make you feel uncomfortable, but it's okay. Right. And people were like, all right, like, how do we move forward together? And I think that's where we need to go.
And there's probably some inherent bias in it with me, because I really grew to like Max Domi this year. He's someone who really enjoys what he does. he still finds the joy and love in hockey, even when his team sucks. He's a personable guy. He's a funny guy. I want to believe that he's a good guy. And I'm sure that colors the way, if I cover a guy who's an asshole to me all the time, I'm probably not going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm human too. And I have my own inherent biases that the guys who are good to me, I'm probably going to give more of the benefit of the doubt than the guys who are just pricks. So
yeah,
for sure, I don't know this. I don't know that Max Domi is a better person than he was when he was 20, but I'd like to think he is. I hope he is.
Hope so. Yeah.
Hope so.
Yeah.
But with what you're doing with Alphabet Sports Collective, where do you see that you guys can make a difference? What interests you in joining that nonprofit?
Yeah, I mean, so the project was started by Brock McGillis's brainchild, and I only really got involved in the past year. But I think that what we are doing is kind of building a community for us by us, right? Just really building a resilient community where we're giving each other the tools to mobilize, to kind of go into these spaces. And make some change. Brock calls it like having a seat at every table. We have an ambassador program, so we're not affiliated with the NHL in any way, but we do have people who will be trained to have these conversations in their respective spaces. There are some media members, there are some hockey players. So just really starting kind of like working from within and strengthening up our resources and our community. And so I think that's where the change is, right? Giving ourselves the tools to push forward. Personally, like, I think that change is very difficult to come from within. So I do think that they're in places like that are very insular, like hockey. So I do think that pressure has to come from the outside, and there has to be a lot of work being done from the outside for us to get anywhere. So
yeah, I feel like there's been so much weight on Brock's shoulders the last couple of years as almost the only voice out there. He's like, anytime anything like this happens, we're all going to call Brock and get his thoughts on it. And I like that he's built up a team around him now where you can step up, and there's other people that can step up and share that burden of being a voice for change and positivity in a league that God sorely needs it.
Yeah, I think the strength in that organization is that we all have very different backgrounds. And I think we exist across the spectrum of like ideologies too, right? I think that's what's bring strength is we are able to have these difficult conversations and be like, actually, this is how we approach talking to certain communities versus others. I think that's really what's been missing in hockey. It's like kind of this community organizing aspect, which is honestly like what appealed to me the most. This idea that we can build trust in the communities that we work with and find and address the needs there.
What was the launch like in Toronto?
Oh, it was fun. We had a couple of Leafs players show up, and then we had there was just like support. We had hear LeBron was there, Rick Westhead was there, so there was like a lot of people who showed up. It was a very busy night. I was like talking to everybody, hey. So I don't really I didn't really get to like enjoy the party side of it, but it was really nice to just like have a very like a lot. This is the first time that a lot of people are meeting and gathering. And I think that it was really joyful. It was a really joyful moment. And I think that we were missing some of that lately.
Cool.
Well, we're glad you're there. We're glad you're doing this work. We're glad you're being a voice for change and keep at it. Thanks for joining us today. And
thanks for having me.
And don't read the comments.
I will not. Thank you.
thanks, Gabby.
Yeah, thanks. No, I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can fix it. I can help even just a little bit.